I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to trace the long path to power traveled by former Indiana governor and current Vice President Mike Pence. We'll talk about his boyhood in Indiana, his first forays in politics, his years in Congress, his controversial tenure as governor, and his elevation to a spot one heartbeat away from the presidency. My guest is Andrea Neal, the author of the soon-to-be-released biography, Pence, The Path to Power. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about a soon-to-be-released biography of Mike Pence called Pence, The Path to Power. My guest is Andrea Neal, who is the author of the book. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Well, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you here. Now, I have to do my, you know, when you get as old as I am, you have to do disclosures and all of that sort of stuff. And I need to disclose that you and I have known each other for a lot of years, that in fact we worked together for a long time at the Indianapolis Star and Indianapolis News. I don't want my audience out there thinking I'm withholding anything from them. So,
good.
But it's good to talk with you. Congratulations on the completion and publication of the book, which comes out next Tuesday, right?
August 1st is the publication date.
And how does it feel to actually be seeing it in print?
Well, I'll see it when I believe it in a bookstore, or I'll believe it when I see it in a bookstore. But I do have a hard copy in front of me, and it's quite a privilege to be able to look at a hardcover of a book about the vice president.
Now, let's talk about the path that event. We're going to talk about Pence a lot because he is a fascinating character. But I'd also like to talk about how this book came to be, because it's not like you woke up one morning and said, oh, gee, I just have to write a book about Mike Pence.
No, I did not set out to do it at all.
So tell me about how it did come to be, how you came to write it.
I had written a book for Indiana's bicentennial called Road Trip, A Pocket History of Indiana. And perhaps because of that, my name came to the attention of someone at Indiana University Press. Honestly, they called me out of the blue. I was driving in the car to Chicago, and I got the question, are you interested in writing a biography? And I thought, oh, well, there are lots of people I'd love to write a biography of. And when I said, about whom? And the response was Mike Pence, I was really kind of stunned, because I figured it would be next to impossible to write a biography of someone who was still making news. But I gave it some thought, and I decided, again, it's kind of a privilege to write about someone in that position of power, and I would approach it from as much a historical vantage as I possibly could. And so the book itself, not counting the epilogue, really tells the story of Mike Pence up until the moment he takes the oath of office as vice president. I felt it would not really be possible to put into context his vice presidency, and that will have to await future historians.
Yeah, well, and it was interesting because I've read the you were kind enough to drop off the galleys so that I could read the book before we talked. And what I found fascinating is actually you tried to propose other figures that maybe,
well,
that
those
maybe
were the ones running through my head. I was thinking of all the people who fascinated me from my earlier book, such as Little Turtle. And I've always thought, oh, I'd love to write about his role in Indiana history. He's really the original famous Hoosier. But Mike Pence is going to stand the test of time as a famous Hoosier. Fourth graders will be depicting Mike Pence in their famous Hoosiers assemblies years from now. So I feel like he was a worthy subject as well.
How long did it take you to wrap your head? Because it did sound like you had a little bit of hesitation. How long did it take you to wrap your head around the fact that, yes, I want to do this?
Oh, I think about 10 days. I was interested in trying my hand at a biography. I like to think of myself as a historian, albeit somewhat amateur, and I felt that a biography that followed someone chronologically through his or her life would be pretty interesting to do, but more significantly, someone who's going to be controversial during the time that the book comes out, and I thought that would be interesting. Can I take a controversial subject, apply my journalism skills, and write it in a way that will be described as unbiased or neutral? And that I thought that was a fun challenge to tackle.
Because we did work together, and you know, Mike Pence has been in many ways kind of a fixture in the public consciousness here in Indiana for at least 30 years. So you, like almost everyone else, was aware of him, knew him, and had known him for a long time. What surprised you when you sort of dug back into his life? Were there any things that kind of leapt out that you thought, wow, I wish I'd known that when I was writing about him 30 years ago?
Yeah, honestly, he's more of a political intellect than I would have expected. And you see that intellectual growth and understanding of the philosophical underpinnings of conservatism starting to emerge in college. He started life as a Democrat. He cast his vote, his first presidential electoral vote, for Jimmy Carter in 1980. And it was really between 1980 and 81 that he made this conversion to Republicanism, starting with the illustrious historian at Hanover College, G.M. Curtis. And then this continued in law school with William Harvey. And he's well-read. He's familiar with the economic theory of Milton Friedman and Hayek. He was influenced by Russell Kirk, who's considered sort of the originator of modern
conservatism.
Author
of The Conservative Mind. Yeah.
Yeah, so really there is an intellectual process and period of study that underpins his conservatism, which I don't think he is known for, certainly because he is an evangelical Christian. He's often stereotyped. Rarely are evangelical Christians viewed as intellects. And whether that's a deserved stereotype or not, I think that people are unaware that he does have a deep background of study. Honestly, the other thing that surprised me is that his friends say he's hilarious. And I don't think we've been able to see the hilarious side of Mike Pence in a while, but acquaintance after acquaintance would repeat stories of Pence having them cracking up on the floor in laughter.
Now, I'm going to ask this because I thought it was just an interesting writing choice, because you have known him through the years too. You've had personal acquaintance with him. You served on the State Board of Education when he was governor. I know you. You had some role with Indiana Policy Review, and he obviously was a driving force there, but you chose not to use any of those kind of personal experiences or insights in the book. I mean, and I'll tell you flatly, anyone who reads it, you're not going to see the first person pronoun after the introduction. It's outside of a quotation. So,
yeah.
What made you make the choice? Okay, even though you've observed the guy at fairly close quarters, that you weren't going to use any of that material.
Well, it's an interesting question. I when I started the process of research, I tried to come up with, when is my first moment that I actually remember being aware of Mike Pence personally? And my first awareness was really of the 1991 Confessions of a Negative Campaigner. This is an essay he wrote after his first two congressional campaigns, both unsuccessful, and it was his sort of grand mea culpa for negative campaigning against Phil Sharp. And that was the first thing I remembered about Mike Pence. I did a clip search, and I had written a few columns about him when I was at the editorial pages of The Star. I did not know him through the Policy Review. I've written columns for years for the Indiana Policy Review, but by the time I affiliated with the Policy Review, he was gone. And actually, I found it fascinating to go back and see some of the work he had done while he was at the Policy Review, because it was quite interesting and important work that he's not known for. And you may want to talk about that a little later. Then he called me during his governor tenure to ask me to serve on the State Board of Education, and I suspended writing my column at that time because I thought that I'd been writing about education for so many years, it would be interesting to see it from a different perspective. And I quickly discovered that that was not the side I wanted to be on. I was always voting in the minority, 8-1, 9-1 on the Board of Education, not effective, not really aligned with either political party in terms of what they were doing on the board. And after 2 years, I was the legislature actually legislated me and the other board members off, and I was not reappointed. But I did not really interact with him during those 2 years I was on the State Board of Ed. So my relationship with him has been very much that of an arm's-length journalist through most of this period.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Andrea Neal, who is the author of the new biography, Pence, The Path to Power, about former Indiana governor and current Vice President Mike Pence. The book's going to be hitting bookstores next Tuesday, August 1st. If you want to join the conversation, if you've got a question about Mike Pence, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So when you set out to write this book, what sort of, when I've had to do longer projects, I sort of have to identify any preconceptions I might have about the guy and, figure out, okay, how am I going to deal with these? How am I going to test these to make sure that they're valid or invalid and all of that? What did you think of him when you sat down to write it? And, now that you are at the end of the process, have those feelings changed at all?
Interesting. I think that my view of him was very much that of the general public's view of him. I viewed him as someone very ambitious. I'd heard him repeat over and over and over again that he was a Christian and a conservative and a Republican in that order. I'd heard him say on numerous occasions that something was a humbling experience or he was very humbled. So I had all these images based on sort of these Penceisms. And that's sort of how I began the book. I really wanted to study him chronologically. And so my first task was to go through newspaper clippings. And I was not familiar with his 88 campaign for Congress. I was not familiar with his law school years. So I sort of immersed myself in his early years and started getting a better feel, I think, for who he was. So I have to say that he is a Christian conservative Republican in that order. I found that to be true, although I thought he overused the line. Mm-hmm. I found that he is an ambitious person and that this political ambition has driven him really since he was in high school. I also discovered that there's no particular inconsistency with being a Christian and being an ambitious politician, that both are callings for him.
And you said you wanted to write it chronologically. That's part of, I think, and I said this before we went on the air, I think the real value of this book is it does give us a sense of what Mike Pence's rise would be like from his perspective. You got to an awful lot of people who knew him at different stages of his life. Was it difficult to get them to talk? I mean, had they learned to be guarded, or, has his rise been so sudden that they're still not reeling?
John, this is where I have to say I think my 30 years in Indiana journalism helped me out, where national reporters might not have had the same access. I prided myself on being a neutral reporter, neutral journalist, and even when I was on the editorial side, listening to both sides, and his friends opened up to me, and I do agree with you that that's the backbone of the book, Mike Pence's rise to power as seen through the eyes of his Hoosier acquaintances.
Yeah. Who are the folks that you found the most helpful?
There were quite a few from his childhood, Jeff Brown of Columbus, his high school years, Tim Grimm, who does not share his politics at all, but was on the speech team with him at Columbus North High School. And
I had
gave
no
me a
idea
lot of insight.
I had, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I had no idea that speech team was the powerhouse. I mean, It's like a who's who.
And diverse opinions on that speech team. So Mike Pence has been exposed and part of a diverse group of leaders really since high school. Quite fascinating. Then as he went along, certainly Jeff Cardwell, who was a buddy of his from the time he first ran for Congress and then state chairman, who cast the vote for the Pence-Trump ticket at the national convention, and Bill Smith, his very longtime chief of staff, all very helpful. And then the incomparable Rex Early, former Republican state chairman and Donald Trump Indiana campaign chairman.
If you are just joining us, we are talking with Andrea Neal, the author of the soon-to-be-released biography, Pence, The Path to Power. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. When we come back from the break, we're going to start talking about the specifics of Mike Pence's rise to power. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today with Andrea Neal. She is the author of the new biography, Pence, The Path to Power, which is going to be hitting bookstore shelves next Tuesday, August 1st. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Phil has done and shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Phil writes, "How does Mike Pence reconcile his religious values with working directly for a man who has shown such a lack of dignity and respect for so many Christian values? That is, with working directly for a man who has shown such a lack of dignity and respect for so many Christian values, his vulgar statements regarding women and all of that."
Yeah, I think this is the paradox of Mike Pence, but I also think it's no accident. I think that he views himself as sort of the salt to Trump's pepper in a way. And I talked to a lot of people about Mike Pence's faith and how he could reconcile those things. And they gave me two answers. The first is there's no question that Mike Pence and his family pray for Donald Trump every day. Prayer is an active daily part of Mike Pence's life. And I think that he knows when Trump makes a mistake, and it's something that Mike Pence prays about. But secondly, I do think he views himself as providing something different, a different perspective, a different way to the ticket. And there's a sense that Mike Pence feels called to be in this moment with this man to provide this counterbalance.
Yeah, and I think Phil's on to what I find, and as I was reading the book, what still remains as the central contradiction in Mike Pence's life was struck when I read the passage when he was talking about before he'd gone to Congress and all of that, about how, you know, adultery is a big problem. Mm-hmm. And he was referring to a female Air Force general who had to leave the service for having an extramarital affair, and that should be a big consideration. And he spoke with real passion and conviction about that. But at the same time, obviously, he is now working with or for a man who's repeatedly violated his marital vows. And somehow he's able to reconcile those things, to be condemnatory to other people, but supportive of this man. I'm not sure it's possible for an outsider to reconcile all of that, Where did your research lead
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it's again. I think there's two answers, and the sort of the bald faced answer is ambition.
Yeah.
And as Rex Early is quoted as saying in the book, this was Mike Pence's last chance at national office, mm-hmm. and so you can reconcile a lot of things when you have a political career that you want to maintain. But secondly, he has, and maybe I can't explain it or even understand it because it is very much an individualized religious view. But he has an understanding of grace, that it's God grants grace and it's his job to grant grace to Donald Trump day after day after day. Now, there's a story after the Access Hollywood tape broke during the campaign trail, and that's when Trump was caught on a live mic with Billy Bush saying some things that were fairly inappropriate. And Mike Pence was quite agitated by it, removed himself from the campaign trail, took a personal apology from Donald Trump, and then returned to the campaign trail, and did not make excuses for Donald Trump, specifically said it was that Trump had made an error, had been mistaken. So I think that Mike Pence is willing to call out behavior that he finds super offensive. Whether they communicate about those things one-on-one in private, I have no idea, but certainly the stories of Mike Pence and Karen Pence calling Trump over to join them in a prayer circle are widely known.
And were you able to talk with Pence?
No, I did not. I tried, and I had hoped to get an interview with him from the get-go. And near the end of my 10-month book writing period, I was denied an interview, which disappointed me a great deal. On the other hand, the public record about Pence is extensive. In the days when he started his political career, there were still lots of newspapers with political reporters covering him and his races. So I felt that I was able to get a lot of the questions I had about him answered that way. But no, I did not speak with Pence personally.
Did they give you a reason for
the reason from his communications director was that Mike Pence does not participate in profile books.
Okay.
Those are the words from the horse's mouth.
Well, and we probably ought to talk about the fact that yours is the first one out of the gate, but
yes,
there are several Pence biographies in the works, right?
Right. Two more in the works. One coming at the end of August by Eisner and D'Antonio called The Shadow President, which the title suggests it's going to be a kind of different book than mine. And then Tom LoBianco, who used to be a reporter here, has got another one coming in March.
Worked for The Star and Associated Press here. So, and that's somewhat unusual that you've got three books this quickly. I don't recall this flurry of interest in Vice President Joe Biden or Vice President Dick Cheney or Vice President Al Gore, or even going back to Dan Quayle or George H.W. Bush. Why do you think people are so fascinated by Pence and his rise?
Well, I'd like to ask you that same question. I actually think that so much talk of impeachment of Donald Trump had publishers out there thinking, goodness gracious, we better do something in case this vice president were to become president over the course of the next 4 years. So that may have been in the back of some of their minds. But I also think that he was not particularly well known outside of Indiana. So there was a drive to write about him. I wrote my book in 10 months, which was a little quicker maybe than I would have liked to have done. But I am pleased that mine comes out first. I used to work for United Press International, and our old slogan was get it first, but get it right. And so my goal all along was, one, to be first, but two, to set the factual record straight before these other books come out. And I think that's what I've done. Hope so.
When you were reading other things, about Pence, what was most helpful and informed you the best, would you say?
Honestly, the Indianapolis Star, whose Washington Bureau reporter's been covering Pence longer than anyone and who has a record of accuracy and fairness that impressed me quite a bit. But then also newspaper clippings. There were magazine articles that were helpful and that I relied upon. I did 50 interviews for the book, and probably the interviews are the source of what I would consider the more unique or unreported information.
We are talking with Andrea Neal about her soon-to-be-published biography, Pence, The Path to Power. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, track us down on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Joe has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Joe, you're on the air.
Oh, thank you.
So,
I was wondering what your own familiarity with cybersecurity is, and whether you feel that you're able to judge what Mike Pence's familiarity with cybersecurity is, and whether he will be able to wisely pick the experts he relies on as to cybersecurity, which I am increasingly alarmed about, especially in the context of the extraterrestrial presence, which could be extremely significant in the area of cybersecurity.
Well, thank you very much for the call, Joe. We'll see if we can get you an answer. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I mean, cybersecurity is certainly an important issue. I don't cover it in the book, and I think that there's lots of evidence that we need to be concerned about it. But I don't have Pence's views on it in particular.
Well, the only thing I think everyone knows is that he was obviously there was an email scandal of sorts near as he was making the transition from being governor to vice president. We discovered that he was still using an AOL email account,
yeah.
and all of that. I'm wondering if it's also in the context here of, you know, questions about meddling in U.S. elections and all of that, about how whether he has the awareness to make sure that those efforts can or will be resisted.
Yes, I can't answer the question from Pence's vantage, but what I can tell you is that he is very competent, and if there's an issue that Donald Trump is having to deal with, there's no question in my mind that Mike Pence has also been briefed on it and has had national security briefings. We know that Mike Pence and Dan Coats are extremely close, the national security director, and so I've got to think that it's something he's fully aware of working on. But I agree. Cybersecurity, just the quote unquote Russian interference with the American electoral process suggests that we have an issue that has to be tackled.
Well, and I think there's a perception nationally that, you know, I'm switching gears here a little bit, that his has been kind of a charmed political life, but really he knew a lot of political failure early on. And we've made reference to the first two congressional races where, 1988, he ran against an incumbent, Phil Sharp, and lost. But it was a close race and gave him some hope. But then he lost ground in 1990 and in some ways sustained a blow to his reputation that could have ended a lot of other political careers.
You know, he's really something of a phoenix, and yeah. I think the book documents three times he's risen from the ashes. His first electoral contest in high school, he lost and came back to become senior class president at Columbus North High School. Then he had the 1990 election against Phil Sharp, which was widely condemned as one of the most negative campaigns in Indiana history, and that was the one that led to the confessions of a negative campaign. He removed himself from electoral politics for a decade and then came back and replaced David McIntosh, who had won the seat that Phil Sharp had previously held, which was the seat that Pence had originally sought. And then certainly as governor, after the controversy over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, many people were declaring his political career finished. And here we have him vice president.
You know, you mentioned when we were off the air that you found his congressional years to be fascinating. What was it that fascinated you so much about that period?
Those were the 10 years when I believe he acted most faithfully on political principles that he cared about. By the time he became governor, I think that he was much more calculated and taking positions based on what he thought might help or hurt him with his future political career. But in Congress, all he cared about was advocating for limited government, individual responsibility, smaller government, and federalism and states' rights, these things that really he had studied starting in his Hanover years. and many examples of him challenging President Bush over the Medicare drug entitlement, over various infrastructure programs, being willing to challenge Republican leadership, and really almost being a voice in the wilderness on some of these principles that the Republicans were purported to have championed. He would complain frequently that by the time he got elected to Congress, he felt like a frozen man or a minute man late to the revolution, because the Republican Party of Newt Gingrich was no more.
And this is one of the things that I agree with you, by the way, and I apologize to my audience. I normally try not to express any opinions here, but to move the discussion along, one of the reasons I have always found Mike Pence to be a more complicated figure than either his admirers or his detractors are willing to acknowledge is, you know, there was a time during that period when I was executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union. And we invited Mike Pence to speak at one of our events. He, during his talk there, lambasted the sneak and peek provisions in the Patriot Act, which was not going to endear him to the Bush administration, certainly wasn't going to win him many friends on the Hill in his caucus at that point. But at the same time, it also wasn't going to pick him any votes up in that room. The chances that the people who were attending that event were likely to vote for someone like Mike Pence. And I thought that's an interesting principled stand there, and that's willing to sort of, challenge and take a stand in support of personal principle, I thought was admirable.
You know, you can go all the way back to 1992 when he was heading the Indiana Policy Review, and he, both individually and on behalf of the Policy Review, sued all 150 members of the legislature because of the practice of log rolling or these Christmas tree bills that combine more than one bill, and he infuriated both parties, and the Indiana Civil Liberties Union actually joined with the Policy Review in that lawsuit against the state of Indiana. And there are other times that he has done this. He, on the First Amendment, people are probably branding him now, along with Trump, as kind of a media hater. But he was very strong for federal shield laws to protect the identity of confidential sources back when he was in Congress.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with the author Andrea Neal about her new biography about Mike Pence. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Marianne has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Marianne, you're on the air. Marianne?
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You're on the air. What's your question?
Yes, I just wanted to make a comment. You were talking earlier about how Mike Pence is able to reconcile his religious beliefs with the actions of Donald Trump. And my feeling is that the word should not be, the word should, that you should be using, or that I would use, would be rationalizing, in that I believe that what he's doing is, for his ambitions, is rationalizing Trump's behavior and putting it in such a way that by his silence, he's either tacitly agreeing, or there are times when he actually has agreed with Mr. Trump and some of the things that are blatantly anti-Christian.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Marianne. So this is part of the challenge, I would think, of writing about Mike Pence. And I should say, we had some months ago New Yorker reporter Jane Mayer on this show talking about her article on Mike Pence. And I found that part of the problem here is that there seems to be absolutely no middle ground on the man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That the people who admire him a great deal, and the people who don't literally can't stand the guy. Was that a challenge when it came to reporting and writing this?
Well, a little bit. And there were several sources that I used, by the way, all named sources in my book of people who simply couldn't see him as anything other than, for example, a homophobe or a hater. But what I heard from most people, including Democrats, people like John Gregg, was that this fellow is.
And they overlapped in law school.
Ran against each other for governor. That Mike Pence has an underlying decency and a willingness to listen to alternative opinions. And I think one reason people appreciate Mike Pence is the same reason these conservative Christians have backed Donald Trump, because he is able to use influence when it comes to things like the Supreme Court vacancies or the policy towards Israel. So there is a rationalization, but I also think it is a reconciliation of two opposing sides.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Andrea Neal, the author of a new biography of Mike Pence. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. We're going to continue exploring the career of Mike Pence when we come back. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking with the author Andrea Neal about her new book, Pence, The Path to Power, which is going to start appearing in bookstores next Tuesday, August 1st. If you want to join the conversation, you can send us an email at NoLimits@WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI. Track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Or you can do what a listener named Dash has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Dash, you're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I've followed Mike Pence ever since his radio days. Mm-hmm. And the thing that sticks out in my mind, in two words that I think need to be replaced or need to be utilized and replace some other, a little softer tone words, is hypocrite and bigot. Mm-hmm. They apply to Mike Pence and have applied to Mike Pence for years and years. He loves to pick and choose which sins he will then talk about there being grace. And then he'll talk about activities of others, but he picks and chooses which ones he wants to condemn, but yet he doesn't look at himself in the mirror. And this picking and choosing of sin, and this picking and choosing of his positions with Donald Trump, I kind of find that he would never have been selected by anybody else other than this guy named Donald Trump.
Thanks very much for the call, Dash. I'm going to give Andrea a chance to weigh in.
Well, certainly the controversy over the Religious Freedom Restoration Act in Indiana gave ammunition to those in the civil rights, gay rights movement who felt he had bigotry towards the gay community. In particular, believed in it, that marriage was an institution between a man and a woman. He felt that the religious liberty law itself was not designed to discriminate against gay people, but rather to be used as a tool by those who were actually the victims of discrimination. But this is one of those issues where the two sides simply couldn't see eye to eye. Certainly his appearance on the George Stephanopoulos interview show during the whole Riffer controversy gave many of his critics ammunition to say that he was sanctioning discrimination against gay couples because of his support of the RFRA law. There are a few instances such as that that have created this impression. Now, hypocrite, I'm a little less certain of where that label comes from, because I do find that he lives according to his own precepts. He does not violate his values or his scriptural tenets in his own life, unless you consider aligning with Donald Trump itself. That's that sort of violation.
Well, and I guess I hesitate to put words in Dash's mouth, but in some ways it's going with the question I presented earlier. Is he's willing to give a pass to Donald Trump for certain kinds of transgressions that he's not willing to give to Bill Clinton, for example. That's probably where that charge of hypocrisy comes from, that that his theology does seem to break along partisan lines.
Yeah, and I'll go back to sort of what I said about the Supreme Court. Yeah. It's sort of a cost-benefit analysis.
Yeah.
If you're a conservative Christian, does having the Supreme Court vacancy filled by the person that you're hoping will fill it, does that outweigh any personal reservations you have about Donald Trump's own peccadilloes and behavior?
We are talking about Mike Pence with the author of a new Mike Pence biography, Andrea Neal. She is the author of Pence, The Path to Power, which appears in bookstores next Tuesday. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call at 866-476-3881. As a listener named Joe has done. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me, Andrea. So, I'm looking forward to your book. And I know, and I believe this, I believe that with Mike Pence, faith drives all that he does, and he's very authentic in that. I know he was raised Catholic, and I believe his wife was raised Catholic. I know she went to a Catholic high school in Indianapolis. In your research, how did they, come about, the choice to leave the Catholic Church and practice a different faith? And was it something that was, ambition? Was it something that was just kind of jointly decided to fit their marriage? Is it, an answer that's kind of protected? So I've never really heard the answer as to why they left the Catholic Church.
If I had...
Thanks very much for the call,
yeah,
Joe.
If I'd had the opportunity to sit down with Mike Pence, that was the top of the list of questions, because here's what I can tell you. When he was at Hanover, and he was still a very... you could describe him as a Roman Catholic, at Hanover. He attended a Christian music festival called Ichthys, and he answered an altar call. And at that moment, as he describes it, he personally accepted Jesus Christ as his Savior, which is sort of that initial preliminary act of a born-again Christian. He continued to describe himself as a Catholic after that. He often called himself an evangelical Catholic. He and Karen were married in the Catholic Church. And over time, they began attending what we would describe as more evangelical Protestant churches. I'm not sure Mike Pence would say he left the Catholic Church. I think he would make the case that he is both Catholic and evangelical. The truth is he has attended evangelical churches in his over the last 20 years, but he has viewed the two things as compatible.
So he sees himself as embodying a reconciliation of the Reformation at some level.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose that this born again experience is sort of the language that goes with the evangelical label more than the Roman Catholic label.
Can we talk, because, one of the things the other quote that he's famous for is that he would say, that he was a conservative but not angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
And until he became governor, the perception out there was, even if you didn't agree with the guy, he was a nice guy. There was all of that. That changed, obviously, during the gubernatorial years. That's when he became this. Not only a lightning rod here in Indiana, but in some ways nationally, and we've seen that and reflected in even the calls and emails we've gotten here. What do you think was it about the gubernatorial years that made it difficult for him to still project that amiable presence that had worked for him well when he was in Congress?
It's interesting. Most people think that he is more of a legislator, more of a legislative branch kind of guy than an executive branch, and so that's part of it. Another element that I think is important is when he was in Congress, that time when he was really motivated by political principle, he was almost always in a minority. He was either in a Republican minority in a Democratic Congress, or more typically, he was a minority within his own party battling the leadership and fighting for limited government ideas that he felt they had abandoned. He becomes governor and he has to lead. He has to set forth a vision, and that was challenging for him. Another reason it was challenging is because because of his careful study of the Constitution and three branches, he always felt the executive should defer to the legislative branch. In Indiana, the governor is pretty weak compared to the legislative branch. And so he was kind of found himself on his heels in this relationship. He started off on the wrong foot, announcing a tax cut without even consulting with his legislative leadership, which was not a good way to begin.
Yeah, he didn't make his friendship with Brian Bosma off to a good start.
He fumbled along the way. Now, I have to say, I think it was the RFRA episode that really tarnished him, because to the best of my knowledge, he continued to be that amiable person. He was able to sit down with Brian Bosma and other legislative leaders and work it out after the missteps.
We've gotten an email from, normally we only go with first names, but this one adds some from Ray Boomhauer, who's a noted biographer, been a guest on this show before. Himself, and Ray's writing to our email address, which is nolimits@wfyi.org. Were there any biographies you consulted before you wrote the book that served as models for how you approached your subject?
Very interesting question. I actually read a biography of Condoleezza Rice that had been done recently. I was trying to look at a contemporary figure, someone of similar political persuasion, and written by an author that I'd never heard of, as I imagine I am for most of your listeners. And so I just wanted to see how that biography looked. And in terms of format, I modeled it very closely after that. Now, my favorite political biography is probably Caro's Lyndon Johnson Path to Power. And I have to say that I had nothing to do with the naming of the book. And it was a pure coincidence that the good folks at IU Press called it Pence the Path to Power. But that's probably my preferred biography. I'm a big fan of Ron Chernow's Hamilton, obviously, who isn't. And I'm in the middle of the Grant book right now, but I dare not aspire to be like Ron Chernow. That's a standard few of us can ever achieve.
Gotten another email from a listener named Sharon. And again, our email address is nolimits@wfyi.org. Sharon writes, what drives Pence and his ambition? And the second part is, what are his views on race in America? He seems to subscribe to a racial mythology similar to Trump, in which making America great again means reinstating the dominance of white men. Witness his views on immigration.
Yeah, on the latter, I actually don't have any evidence to support that notion. His more recent public statements on immigration, perhaps, but if you go back to his congressional career, once again, he was battling hard to come up with congressional immigration reform. And he had an idea that, in hindsight, doesn't look so bad to people, a proposal that he talked to the president about and talked to his own caucus about, which would have created a path to citizenship for illegal immigrants as long as they returned to their native country and filled out certain paperwork and went through a process. And actually, neither side liked it. The left didn't like it and the right didn't like it. So I think that he's practical and he was trying to come up with a solution. And I think that during the Bush administration, many people had hoped the immigration issues would have been resolved, but nothing ever happens. But he was battling for immigration reform genuinely when he was in Congress. I think the first question was about principle and
his ambition.
And his ambition.
How he reckons, what drives him.
He actually is a career politician, and that may sound like a dirty word to some people, but I think a love of governance and politics has driven him for a very long time. He went to law school but said from the get-go, I don't like law. I find government more interesting and governing. And I do think he reads the Constitution as a strict constructionist, and he believes in separation of powers and federalism. And I think a desire to go back to a kind of original reading of the Constitution drives him.
Well, but even there, it seems like at times that, and it gets to the contradiction, you know, when he tried to impose the ban on Syrian refugees here, I mean, there's really no place in the Constitution you can find that the state gets to impose a foreign policy on its own.
Yeah, I think that probably was more for political reasons than what was his genuine belief on the matter. I don't talk about that in the book, I have to say, but I agree that there's a paradox there that's hard to completely understand.
If you're just joining us, we are talking with Andrea Neal about her new book, Pence, The Path to Power. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what Joe has done. We've gotten a lot of Joes calling in today. And call us at 866-476-3881. Joe, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm originally from Rush County, but lived in Indiana, or in Wisconsin, I should say, during the years that Mike Pence was on the radio here in my hometown, and where he developed the Rush Limbaugh decaffeinated. Can you talk anything about that part of his career and clue me in?
Thanks very much for the call, Joe.
Yeah, I actually have I think my chapter is called Rush Limbaugh on Decaf. No, I changed it. It's something else.
Mm-hmm.
He very much studied carefully Rush Limbaugh and styled himself after Rush Limbaugh. Mike was the host of a talk show that at one point was airing on 18 stations in Indiana, and that would have been from 1993 to when he decided to run for Congress in 2000. He was known for having guests of all political stripes on his show, and he liked to talk about the news. He'd start the morning by opening up the newspaper and saying whatever was on his mind. He liked to talk about sports. But there's no question this was a critical period in his formation as a politician, because this is when he really developed mastery of public policy issues and an ability to communicate clearly about them. So very important years in his career. And that was really the time when he rehabilitated his image from the disastrous 1990 campaign and developed a lot of name recognition. There's no question that when he decided to run for Congress, he had the name recognition he needed to be the dominant candidate. So super important time. Now, Rush Limbaugh on decaf, that referred to the fact that he wasn't angry about it, as John alluded to earlier, and he did want to hear both sides. And he would often say, if you can't engage in civil discourse and listen to all sides of an issue, then forget democracy.
Do you think he was ever really interested in being governor? And I'll say this just based on a perception. He's been a guest on this show when he was running for governor, and I found when I was talking with him about issues confronting the state that had a purely state focus, you know, he'd run through the talking points really, really quickly. But then when we got onto the subject of the Affordable Care Act or something that was national in scope or any kind of federal policy thing, it's like he got a jolt of electricity. It was a completely different guy.
I agree with you 100%. I think the reason he ran for governor was because people whispering in his ear were saying, if you have national aspirations, this is the best step. Nobody's elected president from Congress. It just doesn't happen from the House of Representatives. And so I think he ran for governor for political reasons. But I agree with you. In fact, his single greatest achievement as governor was probably that HIP 2.0 program, which allowed Indiana to be flexible in the application of its Medicaid program, and which had him going to Washington and even conferring directly with President Obama on the tarmac at the airport to see if Indiana could get a waiver of the federal rules so it could create its own incentive-based program.
We're getting close on time, so this is the big question. And it picks up on you know, the reason that there are so many biographies about Mike Pence and that projection. If past is prologue, what kind of president would he make if he does get to the White House?
Yeah, I actually think that he would be a competent president. I actually think that he would use the Constitution as his guide. I think that he would lobby for limited government principles. I think he would lobby for deregulation of industry to make the economy stronger. We know he is a big supporter of Indiana coal, so he would continue some of those policies that Donald Trump has implemented. I don't think he would be big on the social issues. I don't think he views the job of the president as dictating what happens on social issues as some might fear. Many people think he would be a dangerous president because of his view on social issues, but he's always felt that was either the province of the people or the legislative branch. And I think he also is an eloquent speaker who could articulate his vision in a way that the public could understand it and respond to it, yay or nay.
That'll have to be the last word, at least for now. And I apologize to all our listeners whose questions we could not get in. When the paperback comes out, Andrea, we'll have to get you to come back here and we'll talk some more about Mike Pence. I'd like to thank my guest, Andrea Neal, for what's been a lively hour. Thank our listeners for some fabulous questions. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister, Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood, and Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.